quirky comedy about a cat. Indoor Outdoor is on stage through the first weekend in November. For tickets, call the box office at 633-4218 or visit racinetheater.org.
Jazz, swing, blues, bop, and more from WGTD is available 24 hours a day on your desktop or laptop, smartphone or radio. To access 24/7 Jazz WGTD on your computer, go to WGTD.org. On your smartphone, download the free WGTD app. In the Kenosha Racine area, 24/7 Jazz HD2 is available via HD radio. And in the Waukegan and Pleasant Prairie areas, the service is being broadcast temporarily over analog radio at 103.3 FM. For more information, call 262-564-3030.
This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW-Parkside, Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Mike Kehoe, a retired substitute teacher and a current special education support volunteer at Bullen Middle School in Kenosha, Chuck Wolbers, a special education teacher with Kenosha Unified Successful Transitions for Exceptional Students Program, and Steve Brown, assistant professor of educational leadership at UW-Oshkosh. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Hello, I'm Karen Sconsert, and this is Education Matters. Today's program is about learning to be American. Our children learn about this in school, but if you come to the U.S. at a later point in time, how do you learn about American government? The Kenosha Literacy Council has accepted the challenge of teaching adult learners about civics along with English literacy. Today's program is to learn more about this unique program, how it began, and how it works for our newest citizens. Our guests today are Cheryl Hernandez, who serves as the Executive Director of the Kenosha Literacy Council. This position allows her to effectively combine her professional experience and passion for education with a desire to strengthen her community. Her background includes extensive experience working with diverse populations. She works to ensure the Kenosha Literacy Council provides innovative, research-based literacy programs and continues to strengthen its presence in the community. Hi, Cheryl.
Good morning.
And Cassie Christensen has been with the Kenosha Literacy Council for 5 years. In her current role as program coordinator, she welcomes new learners, oversees programs, and interacts with volunteers. She also leads KLC's ELL Civics program, in which experiential learning methods are used to explore important topics. This program allows students to improve their English while also learning about the community. Welcome.
Good morning.
And Maria is from Mexico. She has been a Kenosha Literacy Council student for 1 year and currently attends the ELL Civics class. She is using the skills she has learned to talk to her son's teachers, go to the bank, use the library, and talk to her doctor without an interpreter. And she'll be joining us in a little bit. I first want to start and say welcome to all of you. And Cheryl, could you tell us just a little about the Kenosha Literacy Council and what you do there?
Sure. The Literacy Council is a nonprofit organization that helps adults in Kenosha County who are learning to read, write, or speak in English. So we serve two different types of students. We serve students that we call ABE, or Adult Basic Education. Those are students that are American-born English-speaking who are coming to us to learn reading, to improve their reading. Often they're working towards a GED. That's about 20% of our students. The majority of our students, however, about 80%, are coming to us as ELL learners. So that's English language learner. They have come to Kenosha from some other place in the world, and now Kenosha is their home, and so they know it's very important to learn English and learn how to interact in their community, and so that's what we help them do at the Literacy Council. We have many different types of programs and classes to help students. We have tutoring, as well as small group classes and a citizenship class as well to help those that are preparing for the naturalization process.
Great. Cassie, can you tell us how many students do you serve roughly, or how many classes per week, or that sort of thing? Just kind of basic statistics.
Yeah, so we have about 600 students every within a year, and we serve those students with roughly 200 trained volunteers. So they meet at the Literacy Council during our drop-in tutoring program, and we can match them there. And they also participate in classes. So they can put in roughly 10 to 15 hours a week of class, depending on what their schedule allows. So,
wow. So then beyond the two of you, are there any other employees of the Literacy Council that are not volunteer?
Yeah. So Cassie and I are the two main paid staff. We also have a part-time instructor who works as part of the ELL Civics program. Everyone else at the Literacy Council is a volunteer, so all of the other classes are led by volunteer instructors, and all of the tutoring is done by volunteers that are trained on how to work with our materials.
So I'm just going to inject my public service announcement here. I served as an adult literacy tutor long ago when I was in graduate school in Chicago, and it was really one of the best experiences of my entire life. I've been a teacher for 30 years now, and my adult literacy teaching experience was the most meaningful thing I've ever done. So you might want to let people know how they could volunteer, because they may find the same experience.
Absolutely. And our volunteers tell us that so often, that they come into the experience thinking they're there to teach and help their students learn, but they learn so much from the experience too. And it really is very impactful to know how much you've changed somebody's life by just being there to help them learn. And so our volunteers go through a training process. And in the fall, we have information meetings quite often, because we're trying to get many new volunteers. So the next information meeting will be on Saturday, October
14th, I believe.
Very good. At 9:30 in the morning at the Literacy Council. But all of that information can be found on our website, which is kenoshalit.org, or on our Facebook page, or you can call us as well, and we'd be happy to talk to you more about volunteering.
Great. Do you have volunteers that have been with you for a long time?
Yeah, we have several that have been with us for 10, 15, or 20 years. And we have others that come to us for just a short time. So college students, for example, often need a certain number of experience hours for a class they're taking or something along that line. Also, the commitment level for volunteers is very different. We have some that commit to teaching a class for a set period of time. We have others that come to our drop-in tutoring program that maybe just come one Saturday a month. Others that come every, you know, Tuesday and Thursday. So there's lots of flexibility as far as the time commitment that you have to give.
So KenoshaLit.org?
That's right.
Yes? Okay. Yeah. So that, I wanted to get that out, because I really think it's important for people to understand that the work we're about to talk about really is, a lot of it is done through volunteers, so they need to be able to work with that. So your services depend on both the will of the students to come in and ask for help and the volunteers. How do you spread the word in the community so that adult students know about your services?
We work throughout the year to try to get the word out to the students. We have a committee of students that helps us spread the word throughout the community, so they go with us to schools and things to do presentations. This time of year, all of the schools have open houses, and so we try to be a presence at as many as we can, so that we're getting out the word to lots of parents who might need our services. We also work closely with the English classes here at Gateway Technical College, so we share students between our programs and refer students back and forth. So that's another great way for us to get the word out. What else do we do?
Well, we know, that the students that come in, most of the time they're hearing about it, by word of mouth. So we really rely on our students and people in the community that we connect with to be able to reach out and connect with potential students. So when we're connecting with public schools, we might reach out to the ELL teachers or the staff there, a counselor, that would have direct connections with parents that might be looking for that service because the students might not necessarily know how to find that service on their own. So they kind of stumble upon it by word of mouth.
And it's a scary thing for the students to come into some place unfamiliar and say, I need help. And so really when they can count on, you know, a friend or a family member to come with them, that really helps. We had a family that came in last week to register, and the appointment was for the mom. And by the end of the appointment, I think we had their whole family. It's just, well, my husband's here. Can he come to class too? Okay. My mom, she wants to come to class. Okay. My niece wants to come to class. Okay. Yeah. So it's kind of, it spreads like wildfire once right. they hear about us.
Mm-hmm. And you're located where? Your main offices or location?
Yeah. So our main offices are in the Uptown branch of the Kenosha Public Library. So the address is 2419 63rd Street. And that's where we have the majority of our classes. That's where our offices are, but then we also have other classes off-site at the Boys and Girls Club and McKinley Elementary School, and then other branches of the library as well.
So you told us earlier that some of the students you serve are adult basic education students who are maybe American-born, who grew up speaking English but are just strengthening their literacy skills.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have others who probably come to you literate in their native language, but their native language is not English. Is that right?
That's correct.
How many language groups do you serve? Besides, and probably a lot of people speak Spanish, but there are others, I'll bet.
That's right. So last year, our 600 students represented 40 different countries around the world.
Wow.
So I think that people who live in Kenosha are always really surprised to hear that number. Wow. At least people from 40 different countries live in our community. So that's huge. The majority of them are coming from countries that speak Spanish as their main language. So about 60% of our students who are learning English have Spanish as their first language. We have other students from all over Europe and Asia. Our next most popular language represented is probably Korean.
Yeah. Korean or Chinese.
Mm-hmm. Do you have Polish speakers?
We do
Russian
have
speakers?
Some. Yes.
Croatian speakers?
Yes. All of the above. All of the above. And a couple, every once in a while we get a couple of new countries from Africa, so that's always exciting because we get to learn about someplace new and exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so part of my reason for asking that is because we're going to be talking about the civics course. Mm-hmm. So not only are you bringing people in to learn to speak English who maybe aren't familiar, but they're coming from all different kinds of governmental systems, mm-hmm. right? So they're not all used to voting necessarily or understand that process. They may not have like a city council system. I think as a teacher of American government and civics in my past and one who prepares those kinds of teachers now, it is really hard to explain American government to people because of the layers, the local, the mm-hmm. state, right. the fact that there are U.S. senators and state senators and U.S. reps and state reps, and that we have governors, that's another layer before the president. And I think a lot of people struggle with that who've lived here forever. So it must be really a challenge to teach that to people from other systems. Is that correct?
Definitely. Yes.
So how do you do it? What are the ways that you prepare students for their roles as citizens, you know, beyond sort of the basics like voting and things like that? What else do you have to teach them how to do?
Yeah, so at the Literacy Council, we actually have two different programs that we offer to our learners, one of them being the ELL Civics class that we have, and then the other class is the Citizenship class. And they're quite different, actually, but they're both preparing learners to be larger participants within our community. So the civics class is a class that I work with, and it's a class where students are learning about the community that they live in while they're learning English. So what we do is we try and get them, we teach about the places that the students are interacting with on a daily basis. So those places include their children's schools, the banks, possibly talking to their landlords, the library system, the healthcare system in Kenosha, and local government, of course, is within all of that, because we're talking about services that are offered to everybody that lives in the community and who the people are that are directly linked to Kenosha, and then on a bigger scale, you know, Wisconsin and county government and the federal government, and how important it is to be paying attention to all of those levels of government. So
I almost forgot the county layer of government. Wow. Yes, you're right. That does make it complicated. Mm-hmm. So how did you develop this course, and is this a common thing at literacy councils? I know a lot of communities have some sort of literacy council or similar organization, but do they all have a civics course?
Yeah, so the citizenship class that we have, which is different than the civics class, is specifically for the students who are ready for the naturalization process, and they're just looking to learn the information and learn about the process. So that's pretty common amongst literacy councils, but the civics class is quite unique in the idea that it's more of an English language-based class, so learning English while we're learning about all these different other areas in Kenosha. Mm-hmm. So the way that we thought about it was there was quite a few things that came into play when we were coming up with it. But the number one thing is, while we're going through registrations with students, we have a goal-setting process. And in that goal-setting process, we were getting a lot of feedback about wanting to learn about specific things. So talking to their child's teacher is a really common goal. Learning how to talk to the doctor is really common. And then, of course, work-based things so that they can move up in their workplace. So we decided to start a class using not a textbook, because textbooks can be really generalized, and the students don't connect with that as much, because they don't see that same, you know, practice a health history form in a textbook as mm-hmm. they do at, you know, Aurora Hospital or St. Catherine's, which is in town. And so we collect those materials from the community to use in the class. And in addition to that, we know that adult learners respond best to what they're learning when they can immediately apply it to something when they leave. So what they learn today, maybe they'll use today or sometime during this week. So we know that that's the best way for them to acquire those skills.
Great. Well, it sounds like a great hands-on learning experience. I'm just going to reintroduce us. You're listening to WGTD HD-FM. I'm your host, Karen Sconzert, and this is Education Matters. This discussion of the work of the Kenosha Literacy Council to prepare new citizens for their role in civic life through English instruction and civics education is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You are invited to listen again there, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. Our guests today are Cheryl Hernandez, who's the Executive Director of the Kenosha Literacy Council, Cassie Christensen, who's been with the Literacy Council for 5 years and is Program Coordinator, and also leads the Civics Program for the Kenosha Literacy Council, and Maria, who is a student in the Literacy Council and has been in the civics class. Is that correct, Maria?
Yes, I graduated in June from civics class, but I started again because I have the opportunity to learn more words.
It's probably different each time, too,
yeah,
because there
is.
Are more people.
Yes.
So what are some of the activities that you've done, Maria, as part of the civics class?
First was for schools. Mm-hmm. About schools.
So learning how to talk to teachers.
Yes. How mm-hmm. to and how to fill a, how do you call it?
An enrollment form.
Enrollment form.
Oh, right.
Yeah, how to talk to the secretary in the office. Yeah, mm-hmm. things like that.
Right. I'm thinking about that, and I'm imagining how badly I would do that if I tried to do it in French or in Spanish, because I'm not fluent in those languages. And so it must be really challenging the first time you try.
Yes, it is.
Right. The secretaries are very kind, though, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
Mm-hmm. they're my favorite people in the schools. Mm-hmm. They're just always, they know everything, and they're so kind to everyone. What have been some of your favorite activities in the civics class?
About the doctors, because before I used to use an interpreter when I go to the doctor. Now I do by myself.
So you can answer the doctor's questions and mm-hmm. ask questions of the doctor to make sure that mm-hmm. you get the right treatment. That is really, that's a very important thing to know how to do. So as you go around the city learning from various trips, I'm sure there are some people that are surprised to meet you and hear about the class, right? So so how many people are in it at one time, typically?
Yeah, so we have three different sections of the class. There's one class that meets at the Kenosha Literacy Council, one class that meets at the Boys and Girls Club, and one class that meets at McKinley Elementary School. And the goal is for each one of those classes to have about 10 participants in it. So we like to keep the class small enough that everyone feels comfortable and they kind of mm-hmm. create a support system. But you know, we also want everyone to be learning. So we try to keep it around 10 to 12 students in each class. So when they go out in the community, for example, if they go on a field trip to tour Walgreens and meet the pharmacists, all 12 of them are going there together at the same time. So,
right. So then, is the pharmacist surprised to see you, or are they waiting for you?
I think, because normally my husband is who talks for me, mm-hmm. but now I can do it.
Great. So what's been the most interesting thing, any of the three of you, that's happened when you go on one of these field trips?
Mm-hmm. I think with the pharmacy one, I'm going to use that as an example because that one really shocked me when we did like a scavenger hunt in the pharmacy. And it was just really basic things. We would be comparing generics versus name brand things. And usually the students just, we all do it. We recognize Advil as that's the brand that works and that's the one that's going to be the best for me. And that's the one I know, so that's the one I'm going to choose. But when we actually flip over the boxes and compare it to generics, people are seeing, you know what, this box is about, $3 cheaper and it has the exact same ingredients. And another field trip that really kind of shocked me was going to the bank. And students saying to me at the end of the trip, I've never gone through a drive-thru. I'm too scared to use the drive-thru at the bank. Just because there's no person that they can see facial expressions or body expressions. So that drive-thru thing is a really hard.
Right, because it is so much of how we communicate is just through expression. And if you can't see that, then you're just hearing the voice.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right. And the idea to press a button for that little thing to shoot up to go to the banker.
You have to trust that it's going to the right place.
Yep.
So what are some of the other places? It sounds like you go to the school, learn to talk with the secretaries and the teachers. You've been to the bank, mm-hmm. to the drugstore and talked to the pharmacist. Where else?
We went to the library.
Library, great.
Yeah. And I didn't know I can get check out some books in one library, and I can return in another one.
Right, isn't that handy? Mm-hmm. I do it all the time.
Yeah, I didn't know that before.
Right.
And Maria was also one of our students this year who stood in front of the Common Council at the municipal building during a Common Council meeting and gave a little speech. So she was a student to do that this year. So that was a first for many of our students. And we always take a big trip at the end of the year, normally to Madison to see the Capitol and tour the Capitol. So kind of connecting local government to a little bit of a larger local government.
Right. Did you go on the Madison trip?
Not yet.
Oh, okay. That is an impressive building, the mm-hmm. Capitol. So you'll enjoy it. It's pretty intense. Yeah. So, what are some other things that have happened on these trips around town? Anything?
I think it's fun. They usually go on a field trip to the fire station, and that one is very unpredictable because we are at the will of the firefighters and when they need to leave. And so, there was one year where every fire truck and ambulance had to leave during the course of our field trip. And so everyone in the fire, I'm sure not everyone in the fire station, but most everyone was gone. And our group of students and teacher was just, okay, well, we got to see the fire station in action. So that one's always really exciting. And sometimes they let, you know, they learn how to use the fire extinguishers and things like that. So that's fun. They also usually tour the hospital. Mm-hmm. And so for a lot of our students, that's something new and different. I think in general, for me, the biggest thing that comes from the class is that the students learn that they have access to all of these places. Mm-hmm. So I think it's sometimes even more than just a language barrier, which there certainly is, but I think there's also a cultural barrier. And so in a lot of countries that our students are coming from, they wouldn't think to interact or communicate or question the professionals in the way that we do. So, for example, in a public school setting, the teacher expects the parents to ask questions and to be involved in the school and to come to conferences and to interact with the teacher. But many of our students come from cultures where that would is not only not normal, but would be frowned on. Mm-hmm. So you wouldn't question a teacher. You wouldn't ask a teacher, how is my child doing, or how are you teaching my child? The same thing goes for the doctor. Mm-hmm. The doctor is a professional. He has all of the knowledge. He knows everything. I wouldn't ask questions of him. I just come in and do what he tells me to, and I leave. And so helping the students understand that we kind of are all a part of the community together, and we all interact with each other, and helping them feel like they can access all of these different places and feel comfortable. And so that's always the biggest part for me, is when the students come back and say, you know, we learned about buying a house, and now my family is going to go buy a house. Yeah. When they say, you know, I went and talked to my doctor for the first time without an interpreter, that's huge. That's a really big deal. When they go and say, for the first time ever, I didn't need the interpreter for my child's student-teacher conference. Or we went and got library cards on our own. Or all of these things that they can go and do on their own now means that they're more independent and they're more actively involved in our community, which is better for us all.
That is great. Yes, yeah. I mean, it is better for everyone, because we want people to be healthy and their kids to have good education, and we want people to be responsible homeowners and all those things. So, yes. Maria, what do you think is the best part, the thing that you've learned that's had the best impact on your life from this class?
The best part? I try to enjoy everything, yeah. You know?
It's like all the best part.
Yeah, it's all, because I'm learning English. Mm-hmm. It's what I like.
And so you decided to take the class again because you want to continue to learn.
Yes, and I go on Saturdays, too, for a conversation, too. Yeah.
Great. So is there anyone who's sort of taken the civics course or the lessons that you've taught and really taken it to the next level and done something interesting that maybe you wouldn't even have expected?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a really, really great example of this was a student that I was teaching, and she and her husband were renting in a house. They were renting a house. They had four children, and they were paying about $1,200 a month for this house on a one-person income, so only the husband was working at the time. And they had always dreamed about having their own house. So during the housing portion of my class, we did an online house shopping activity where they just kind of browsed through properties in Kenosha, and it broke down mortgage payments by month. And she went home that day and talked to her husband, came back to class the next week and said, we're looking at this house. I think we're going to buy it. It's only going to cost us $400 a month. She said, it's small now, but with the extra $600 we'll be saving from rent, we'll be able to buy our dream house in the future. So just that idea where you give them a tool to use and they really just take it and fly.
Wow. Do you have any stories like that, Cheryl?
Tons of them.
Right. Turns out you do.
Yeah. I think, you know, all the students take it at a different level and where they're at in their lives. So for some of them, the even just kind of being able to do that parent-teacher conference on their own is a big deal, or being able to open a banking account when they didn't think that they would ever do that or understand why they would need to do that. I mean, sometimes it's just the simple things. They learn the difference between a debit card and a credit card. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of our students know through kind of news and media that they kind of get the idea that credit is a bad thing. And so in the class, and so they don't want to use a credit card ever. They don't want to use the bank card that they have that's attached to their checking account because it has a credit symbol on it. And so just helping them understand kind of all of those nuances, all those little things, and they end up making, those little things end up making a big impact in their life.
One of the things that I think is really confusing here, even for me, is insurance. Do you spend time talking about car insurance, house insurance, and health insurance?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's definitely the students want to learn about that. That's mm-hmm. one of the first things that they bring up in the beginning of class. So we spend time on that, mostly understanding what insurance is and, you know, how does it all work? What are, you know, what's a premium and a deductible? What do those words mean when you're shopping for insurances so that we're not telling them which insurance, you know, is better and best, but giving them the tools so that they can do their own shopping and, you know, comparison.
Mm-hmm. And the idea, I think, healthcare in general is just a very confusing thing. Mm-hmm. But a lot of our students come from countries where they don't necessarily pay to go to the doctor mm-hmm. or they pay a lot less than we do. And so their husband, you know, maybe the husband or somebody in the family has insurance through their workplace here, but then they don't really understand why that doesn't pay for all of their health care. Mm-hmm. So the idea that there is a deductible that you have to meet first or you are going to pay like a copay and, you know, what all that means and what those different terms are, and so that they don't show up at the doctor's office needing to pay a bill and not understanding why that is.
Right. I kind of feel like we all need that class. Yes. I still don't know.
Somebody please tell me why. Why?
Right. Right. So I'm trying to think. So, Maria, is there something you still want to learn about civic life that you would like to have added to the class? Have you thought about that?
I like the class when the last class was the government.
Uh huh.
And I like that because I'm trying to get my citizenship too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need to know all the about the United States. And yes. I'm going to take it that again.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's a good one. I actually, one of the things I do at Carthage is teach future social studies and history teachers. And the very first class, the last class they take before the student teaches social studies methods, and I make them all take the U.S. citizenship test mm-hmm. on that first day mm-hmm. to see how they do. And most of them are U.S. citizens, or almost all, I think, that I've had so far, and they don't get them all right. They don't. A lot of times it's usually between 80 to 90% right. Well, that's good. But there are some really difficult questions on that test. And so it does require a lot of studying. And also, I think with the hands-on that you're doing, some of those things are very abstract. So I think if you see it, do you do anything with the court system?
We do. Every year we take a tour of the courthouse as well. So they'll even get to sit in on a hearing and see what that looks like and the difference between like a criminal case and something that's a civil case. Understand that those are different things and not everything is law and order.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And we spend time talking about civic responsibilities. So they... this year, they were fortunate enough to go through what a jury duty, you got called in for jury duty, what's the process there? So we all went and sat in the room and watched the little video so that they understood that that's actually a responsibility, and just like voting is, right? That's your right to do that. It's also your responsibility to sit on a jury with your peers. So all of those things are mm-hmm. very different than what they're experiencing in their countries. And the idea that we have different levels of court as well. So I know a lot of times everybody thinks that the president is the one person who has that makes all the decisions and choices in the United mm-hmm. States. And I said, well, do you think, you know, he's making the choice about who's going to pick up your garbage? Probably not. Okay. So who's doing that and how do we pay for that? And mm-hmm. talking about taxes and things. So
and how and where all the different taxes go to and who's exactly. responsible. That makes sense. I'm going to reintroduce again. You're listening to WGTD HD-FM. I'm your host, Karen Sconzert, and this is Education Matters. This discussion of the work of the Kenosha Literacy Council to prepare new citizens for their role in civic life through English instruction and civics education is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You are invited to listen again, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. Our guests today are Cheryl Hernandez, who's the Executive Director of the Kenosha Literacy Council, Cassie Christensen, who leads the Kenosha Literacy Council Civics Program, and Maria, who has been a Kenosha Literacy Council student for a year and has attended the ELL Civics class once, and she liked it so much, she's going to do this again. Maria, what do you think impact your work and learning through the Literacy Council has on your children? What do they think of the work you're doing?
I think they are happy for me. They feel proud of me. Mm-hmm. Because I can involve myself more in the schools mm-hmm. and with the people around me who only speak English.
Mm-hmm. And how many children do you have?
Three.
Three.
Yes.
So is there a difference in the way you interacted with your oldest child's teachers and your youngest?
Well, the oldest one, he is in the Army.
He's in the Army?
Yeah.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah, he's not here now. The second one is in high school. He's in 10th grade. And he's doing okay now with his grades. Right now, I don't have any...
Well, you don't usually talk to high school teachers as often as younger.
Yeah, normally, no, only on conference.
Right,
yeah.
Right. But your younger child is in second grade, is that
yes,
correct?
Yes, it's
so
in second grade.
So probably you see those teachers almost every day.
Yes, every day when he get out from school, mm-hmm. I say, hi, how he doing?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm trying to involve more with the teachers.
Right. Yes, so that's a big change then probably from your older sons to be able to talk to the teachers yeah. more with your younger mm-hmm. son. That's great. Mm-hmm. Good for you.
Thank you.
And I bet the teachers like it as well.
Oh, yes.
Because they want yeah. to be partners mm-hmm. with the parents, and they probably wish that they could speak both languages, mm-hmm. but you can and they can't,
yeah,
so
I'm
they
trying.
Need your help. Right. So the other thing, of course, I heard you talk about going to the library. So, of course, this is near and dear to my heart because I'm a trustee at the library. So what are some of the things that the class does in the library? Any of you can answer this.
Mm-hmm. So we always learn about where the libraries are, number one, because
right.
a lot of times people think, just like Maria had said before, they're all separate, right? They don't realize that there's actually four libraries in our community and that they're all connected and they're actually the same library system. So that's something that we have to break through first. And then we, because we're located in the library, we have the ability to just go upstairs and get a tour from one of the librarians there and learn about the library that they come to every day. And then we take it up a notch and we'll go to the largest library in Kenosha, which is the Southwest Library. Many of the students are familiar with it, but they don't necessarily know how to find materials on their own, or maybe don't even know who's the right person to ask to find those materials. And understanding that, you know, we have all these different collections, right? We have fiction and nonfiction and browsing materials. So we talk about all that stuff and how to they do online searches to learn how to use our catalog so they can kind of find those things on their own.
Mm-hmm. And get a library card?
They always get a library card.
Right. And then they are able to navigate the library on their own. What's your favorite thing to do at the library, Maria? Do you bring your son?
I like to bring my son at the library because he likes to read books. mm-hmm. and see a movies,
right.
cartoon movies. And they are a play area, and he right. can play. He likes to go to the Southwest Library.
Yes, yeah. Everybody loves to go play in the mm-hmm. children's yeah. section. Yep. Even I do
Even
now.
Even the girls do. And I think another thing is our parents aren't necessarily aware of all the programs that happen there, so all the story times and things that happen in the fall and the spring and the summer that are really learning opportunities for right. their families.
Coding so. Camps for children
yeah,
and
exactly.
other things. Yes, those are all there. So if there's anything, is there anything you could add? If you could, what would you want to add to your civics class?
Oh, that's a good question. There's definitely things that have come up in the past. Is, oh, that should be in the civics class. If only we had an extra, 3 weeks. we do a really good job, I think, of making sure that we hit what the parents want to learn. And we can adjust it, like you had said, every year is different. So it depends on the group of students and what they want to learn. So we're always able to tweak the class so that we can incorporate all of those things. So mm-hmm. it's definitely a skeleton of what we will be teaching, but we can always add stuff as needed.
Yeah, I remember one year there were many students in the class who were of an age where they might be going to university
yep.
or parents who had children who were in high school. And so everyone in the group was very interested in learning about the colleges here in town, the Technical College, Carthage, Parkside, what the differences mm-hmm. were, and how you go about going to college. Yeah. And so that year the course took a different spin than the normal let's talk about parent-teacher conferences, working with younger kids. So they were able to tour Parkside and learn some things about, the college admissions process and things like that.
Well, that's a good thing to add.
Yeah.
Is there anything you still want to learn, Maria, that hasn't been covered?
Oh, I need to learn a lot of things still. I need to go the most I can mm-hmm. to learn much more.
Right. So I always like to finish with maybe a little story or a uplifting thing that might have happened. So do all of you have maybe one thing you could tell our listeners about the civics class and why it has been such a good thing for you as a student, Maria, or for you as a teacher, or just for the community in general? Maybe, Maria, you could start. What's been a really good thing that's come out of it for you?
Well, it's been good to go to there, a literacy concert, because I am learning a lot, and mm-hmm. the people should go there because mm-hmm. to learn. My sister-in-law, she star, mm-hmm. and I think she like it.
Great.
She's learning.
Yeah. And Maria, I think that your sister-in-law started because you encouraged her so
yes.
much because mm-hmm. of your experience
mm-hmm.
there.
Right.
So. Last year, I invited her, but she didn't want to come, mm-hmm. and she started for tutoring last week, and she said, oh my God, I should come last year.
Right.
I was just going to say, so what do you think is the most important thing you learned in class last year, in civics class?
Civics class?
What's the most important thing you learned?
Most important was, well, I like everything.
It is hard to decide. We're putting you on the spot.
Yeah.
What's been your best experience as the instructor, Cassie?
Mm-hmm. I've kind of mentioned some of them in the past. I think what I love about it so much is when we get students coming in that are talking about the decisions that they're making, that they are applying what we learn in class, right away, and we know that they're making better, I wouldn't say better parenting decisions, but they're able to use what they learn in class to be better parents and make better health decisions, so they know what options are out there and what they can do to stay healthy, and then also how to communicate with the doctors. And then financial decisions. I think that a lot of times financial decisions, we don't think about it as much, when we're growing up in the United States because we're so used to the way that things are. But financial literacy in that class is huge. So there was a student last year who had just bought a car And, you know, they were really giving her not a very good interest rate. And she ended up the next month going and refinancing her car because she learned that she could do that. She never knew that that was an option. So,
well, we're almost out of time. So I'll just ask you quickly, Cheryl, how can people find out more about the Literacy Council?
Sure. They can come visit us at the Literacy Council inside the Uptown Library. They can go online and see our website at KenoshaLit.org. So KenoshaLit.org. They can find us on Facebook. Mm-hmm. They can come to one of our community events, and we'd love to get to know them.
Excellent. Thank you very much. You're listening to